Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. The off season is upon us. The season ends when the Bears end, right? Kyle,
that's
like
right.
Playoffs all over. Super Bowl might as well not even happen. We're into the off season as Bears fans. And by popular request, we are going to do some season in review grades for every.
Yeah, we did this. Our first year back.
Member of the Bears roster.
Yeah, we did this after our first year back. We did position or we did grades for each player on offense and on defense. We did not do it last year because we were just angry. We were dejected. We were defeated. But now we're great. Everything's fantastic, and we're gonna just roll through. We're gonna roll through this roster, and we'll commune as to what are we doing. Letter grade? Just letter grade for each guy.
We got to give them a letter grade if we're doing grades. It's got to be by our brilliant American letter grade system.
Okay, and so you decided you wanted to do in order of snap count, right? Instead of just doing position groups.
That's right. Well, you gave me two choices, and that's the one I
did. Do you want to do you? Okay, so you did say snaps instead of position,
buddy.
Okay,
I'm just
so let's start. Let's start with this should be an easy-ish grade. So the number one snap getter for the Chicago Bears this year, I believe he took every single snap, God bless him, with 1,313 snaps in the regular season and the postseason combined, Drew Dahlman. The prize free agent signing of last year's class. Travis, what did you feel about Drew Dahlman year one in Chicago?
The best and worst thing I could say is good, solid, which we haven't had for over a decade at the center position.
Yeah.
Really, I remember when the Bears signed him, Atlanta Falcons fans were like, he's not worth all that money, man. And all I could think was okay, maybe not to you, but to me, a guy who
if you have
had
learned
a good center for over 10 years.
Oh, yeah. If you have learned to take center for granted, maybe, but
yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. If I'm giving a letter grade to Drew Dahlman, I think I'm going to go ahead with an A minus. Mm-hmm. Positives, pros, if you will. Took every snap. That's huge. That is that stability at the center position with the quarterback, with all the check protections and everything that they need to call out at the line in this scheme. That was huge. As a blocker, was very good in the run game. Mostly pretty solid in the pass game. He had a couple games where just, I think, a bad matchup where, some guys kind of ate him up just given size. Don't think he nor Jonah were particularly good in either Detroit game or either Vikings game. The only reason I really have the minus, though, there on Drew is that there were some bad fucking snaps along the way. There were, we had a few too many balls go over Caleb's head a couple times, and we had, one notable one go well over Monongai's head. And I don't blame Drew necessarily that Kyle Monongai was back there. There were some snap issues. Plus there was that weird time against the Saints when he just didn't let go of the ball. Still don't know what the hell that was. Otherwise it's very good signing by Ryan Poles. Not something we say around here a whole lot, but just cannot quibble. You and I have been saying literally since Olin Krutz left, you and I have been saying that the Bears are trying to rethink or reinvent the wheel. They're trying to overthink this. Just take the best center available, offer him the most money, and just don't think about center for a couple of years. It's that simple. And at least in year one of this contract, and Drew is still, he's not, he's only 27 at a position that I do believe tend to age fairly slowly as far as the offensive line positions go. I think we can look forward to Drew, putting up similar efforts throughout the rest of his contract. Don't really have any concerns about him next year. Would like to see him get the snaps a little lower more consistently next year. That's about my only major quibble. So how do you feel about an A minus for Drew Dahlman, Travis?
I would say B plus.
B plus. You are a cruel mistress, Travis Frank.
The snaps are a big part of it, but I also think, he's sandwiched between You know, a guy who's probably going to the Hall of Fame. And then on the other side, a guy who got, for the, you know, we're going to get to him, but a guy who got really good as the season went along. That makes a center's job a lot easier. And like you said, I did notice him getting run over a couple times. Definitely not all the time. Like a really solid anchor down the middle. But for that contract, I do think you kind of, you don't want those snap issues. And you kind of want, like, exemplary play. I think to you and I were both like, I fucking just be the anchor down the middle. Make me not think about Sam Mustipher, so, Roberto Garza moving over, or James Daniels switching in and out of center.
So, sorry, not to cut you off there, but I
go for it.
Not to put too much weight on PFF grades. I know people have their feelings about them, and I do too. But just kind of, and this mostly aligns with kind of how I felt. So exemplary play. So in PFF, you know, a 60-ish, 65-ish really is about average. Anything in the 70s to 80s is considered really good. So by on that measurement, I would, they have, at least in pass block grades, they have him down for four games where he was in the 80s. That was the Bengals game, the Ravens game, the Saints game, the Eagles game. They had him down for another five games where he was in the 70s. That was the first Green Bay game, the Detroit second Detroit game, the Steelers game, the Commanders game, and the Browns game. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's nine games where he played very well. And then they had a handful of average games in there, the second Detroit game, or the first Detroit game, the second Vikings game, the Giants game, and then the playoff game against the Packers. And then he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games that they would consider subpar. Week one against the Vikings, which definitely matches my memory. Apparently he struggled against Dallas. Didn't remember that. They had him down pretty low in the Rams game in the playoffs, the Vegas game, the 49ers game. That one surprises me a little bit. And then the second Green Bay game was his lowest graded game of the season. So, yeah. So I would say on the whole, you know, you're talking like a B plus is maybe fair. You're not going to quibble to B plus versus A minus. I'm just so relieved to have a center that I generally trust. But yeah, I think A minus, B plus, definitely fair there. I think we'll move on now to the next highest snap getter on the Bears offense. And I think this is going to be really short. I'm going to give Joe Tooney and his 1,308 snaps, the future Hall of Famer, I'm going to give that motherfucker an A+. That is the best guard play I have seen in a Bears. That is just what a dude, that is what a certified fucking dude looks like, man. Just truly, truly special player, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's just not anything else you can say. If you could give him a grade higher than A+, you would. Also, probably going to easily go down as Pohl's best trade as far as value. Just like,
yeah, and wow. What I mean, we didn't even, wow. Yeah. So, you know what, as I was just saying with Dahlman, you know, an 80 grade is considered extremely good, and it was a good sign that Dahlman had what, four of those games? Mm-hmm. They have Tooney down for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games with an 80 or better pass block grade. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 game, another 8 games in the 70s. He had just one game, the first Detroit game, where he rated below average in pass blocking. So that really just, 1,300 snaps, just a dude, a future Hall of Famer, very easy to see why. I don't think we need to waste much time other than saying Joe Tooney, good, and getting that man for what we got him for was, I got ahead of the polls again, highway robbery there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's like every time he was out there, it was just like, oh, we've just got a Hall of Famer at left guard right now. He slotted in to left tackle in the last game of the year, and he played great, you know, and he was forced to do that his last year with the Chiefs, too. Right. Yeah. He had to play left tackle the whole year.
And I have heard some whispers like that he may be, to start next year, their best option at what they're considering at left tackle to try to, just because they seem to have, I mean, Jordan McFadden, we'll get to Jordan McFadden at some point here. They have some options on the interior in terms of guys that they like. they, you know, left tackle, they don't necessarily have anybody that they like better than Joe Tooney, so we may see Joe Tooney at left tackle next year. I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes. This is not the off-season planning episode yet, though.
That's right.
We'll get to that. As we, so we're just reviewing
the season that won. Ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Just
so
reviewing. We'll,
yeah, so number three in terms of snaps for the 2025 Bears offense, Caleb Williams. Travis, what letter grade are you giving the quarterback?
So Caleb's grade has to come with like a little bit of
you caveating, son of a bitch,
because he's a second year quarterback, right?
Yeah, so I mean, to be clear,
I'm not talking about Caleb here in the sense that like this particular season was an A plus, but I would say for a second year quarterback,
I think it's totally fair to
going, I would say A plus.
Yeah, I think as we go through these guys, I think it's totally fair to account for draft status and or salary. You know, what the role they were asked to do, what the expectations are for them. Just because you give them a grade for this effort, I think if Caleb has this exact, I don't know that I would go as high as A plus, but I think because I'm saying you were a tough son of a bitch, but I think, you know, an A plus, you got to leave him something to strive for here, man. And there are some things.
Of course.
There are enough things in Caleb's control that he fucked up that I can't give him an A+. I mean, for as much as we have gone into so much depth on this podcast as to why the accuracy concerns, in my opinion, are overblown.
Sure.
There are still some just layups that, like, Caleb Williams will tell you he
misses
fucked up.
A few. There's, yeah.
There's enough in there that I'm not giving the guy an A+. But I will say, yes, given where he was last year, given everything he did this year, given the fact that I still think it's just massively underrated the strides he made in sack avoidance alone. That, I don't think people understand how fucking... It's never happened before, as far as I know, to see a guy... He went from a pressure to sack rate of almost 30% last year to under 10, including the playoffs this year. 9.6% pressure to sack. And that's insane. It's never happened before. I've never seen that before. I didn't know it was possible. I thought I was optimistic about Caleb entering this year because I was like, if you look at Kyler Murray, who's a similar kind of player in some ways from year one to year two, if you look at this guy from year one to year two, they all cut the sack rate. I'm expecting that Caleb will cut the pressure to sack rate down to under 20%. He'll cut the sacks down to that 40 to 45 range. We can work with that. Never would have dreamed that this dude in 19 games, including the playoffs, how many freaking sacks did this dude I don't remember off the top of my head. How many freaking sacks did he end up taking in 19?
I know he had 24 sacks. In
25 sacks.
Okay.
25 sacks in 19 games.
Yeah.
After 68 in 17 last year. That is insane. And that's such a huge, that's why I am such a big believer in adjusted net yards per attempt. That's why it's my favorite. I've become a meme of myself talking about adjusted. Like, if that matters. The sacks matter so much. And we talked about that with Jordan Love, where, like, the theory with early Jordan Love was, like, especially with a coach like Ben Johnson, who's going to go for it a lot on fourth down to Travis's chagrin. Like, when you give a player like Caleb Williams four plays and he's not going to take a sack and he's not going to throw an interception, he might misfire on one of those passes, but he's going to hit something for 30, 40 yards somewhere in there, and he's not going to take an ugly sack. That is huge. That gives you his creativity, his sack avoidance, that gives you such an incredibly high floor. And I still believe looking, you know, I think last year, his rookie year was obviously what Caleb Williams' floor in just complete and total dysfunction was. And it still wasn't as bad as people made it out to be. I'll never get over how people made that out to be like a historically awful rookie season, and yet it was like somewhere in like better than Trevor Lawrence, near Kyle. It was nowhere near a historically bad rookie season in context, but people acted like it was. That last year was his floor in a totally dysfunctional NFL offense. This year, I still believe, is his floor in this offense. I think he'll smooth out the rough edges next year. And it was still good for 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt, 9th in team dropback EPA, a top 10 offense, however you want to slice it, whether it be EPA per play, points, yardage. So I will give, I'm not as, first time ever, I think Travis is more charitable to Caleb than me.
Yeah.
I'll give him an A, you give him an A+, but yeah, he's the quarterback, folks. They have the quarterback.
Yeah, I think the sack avoidance is the main thing. Many moons ago, a guy we're going to talk about again here in a few weeks when we go back over our original draft predictions here. We talked about Anthony Richardson, and
we
one
did.
Of the things both of us loved about him, he never lost yards. It felt like he evaded every sack, or he threw the ball away, right? And he was never going backwards. It always gave Florida a chance on that next play. Just the number that sticks in my head, last year he lost 466 yards on sacks. This year, 165. That's it for
That's
the whole
wild.
Season
That's
for
wild.
Caleb Williams. Yeah. Insane. He kept the Bears in the game all the way down to the fourth quarter. Like, the reason that he was able to make all these crazy final plays is he was so willing to throw the ball away on a play that didn't work, not take a sack, not blow the game, and then get that last chance, that next last chance.
Yeah.
Just like really.
Yeah, it's funny. I think Caleb this year was like this year. And I think Caleb, again, I think his accuracy concerns are overblown. I think the completion percentage will rise next year without question, in my opinion. But it's funny. Caleb this year, I think, was like the optimist. Caleb this year, I think, was only still at like 75 percentile Caleb Williams outcomes. But I think that was like the 99th percentile Anthony Richardson outcome was Caleb this year. In the best case scenario, Anthony Richardson was maybe going to be what Caleb was this year, and I still think this is at, like, the middle case scenario for Caleb. So, yeah, truly wild. All right, the next guy on our I accidentally closed my tab. Okay, next guy on our snap count, Travis, you were not a fan of acquiring this gentleman, but at 1,292 snaps, Jonah fucking Jackson, what hast thou to say of Jonah, a whale
Jonah,
of a man.
You started out the season and you were just reinforcing my points. You know, I was like, that guy sucks. And you were sucking it up the first couple weeks. And then week by week, this motherfucker works himself back into shape and he just gets better every game until by the end of the season, he felt like maybe one of the most integral pieces on this offensive line. Not really a weakness on this offensive line until we get to the injuries at left tackle. But yeah, Jonah, just what else can you ask for from a guy? And we'll talk about this with a lot of guys here. Our head coach now develops guys and coaches them up, and they get better as the season goes on. We've never seen that before. Jonah's got to be the poster child for that.
Yeah, and again, not to, you know, PFF grades, blah, 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 usual caveats, but just, again, kind of lines up with what you're saying. By grade,
I want to tell you, I fucking hated PFF grades this year. When we get to Tremaine Edmonds, we'll talk about why.
Well, I will say this. PFF grades, the ones that I have always kind of liked the most and that generally align the most with what I think have been their offensive line. PFF grades in general, I think the further you get away from the ball are bad. And especially their linebacker grades have always just been horrid, in my opinion. Just absolutely.
Oh, those were a mess.
Their PFF grades used to fucking, like, if you believed PFF, Lance Briggs was a horrible fucking linebacker. Like, and I just, that's all I need to say there. But as far as their offensive line grades go, I do think it tells kind of the story you would tell about Jonah Jackson. Because by week, this is what they have. 31, 68, 68, 52, 58. 72, 60, 91, 87, 67, 76, 74, 65, 72. Like, dude that came on strong. Took the vast majority of the snaps. I don't believe he missed a start, missed a couple. He got poked in the eye, right, in one game, and Newman had to come in for a couple drives. And this was the argument that I made for Jonah. If people go back and listen to our offseason thing, when I was defending the Jonah Jackson move, not that I was like super in love with it, but like I thought you were being too harsh. And I was like, this is a guy, I don't think he's a guy with major injury concerns. He really just had one year where he got hurt. Everybody's allowed one year where you got hurt. And I was like, and I think, you know, with after years of watching Tevin Jackson, like the value of average guard who's just healthy and takes every snap is, I think, underrated in this league because continuity on that offensive line is so important. And he ended up being better than average this year. He really had some all pro looking moments. Still not just in true pass set situations. Not a guy that you still want to leave on an island in true pass sets too often, but still just, I mean, everything that they could have asked him to be big on Jonah. going for it. So letter grade for me, Jonah, in terms of expectations and every what they gave up for, he is my A plus here, I would say.
You mentioned Tevin Jenkins. Jonah also has that habit that Tev had when he was out on the field where he would like dominate 10 snaps, and then that 11th one, he would just fucking whiff, and like a dude is running right past him, and you'd be like, "What happened, Jonah?"
Yeah, like, it did feel like
do that.
And then it did feel like his mistakes. Yeah, it did feel like his mistakes were more mental than anything, where he would just blow. And it was not so much that he got beat, although that did happen in the Vikings. Jalen Redmond, who's a fucking stud, a great find by the Vikings. Jalen Redmond had his number in both of those matchups, I felt like. Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I felt like he was usually had one or two plays a game where he would just whiff, but not really so much as like he got beat.
A from me for Jonah.
A for you for Jonah.
Proven me wrong. And we didn't really give up that much for him either. So, yeah, I mean, we should probably reiterate, Poles kind of fucking owned this offseason. Yeah,
he did. Well, on one side of the ball.
We'll talk about the other side in a bit.
I think we're going to try to do a super recording session tonight and do both sides of the ball, but we'll break them into two episodes for your enjoyment. So just we'll for...
We're at 21 minutes right now, and we are not close to done with the offense.
We forget how much we yap. We do. Yeah. Anyways, this one I think also... Well, this one will save us some time because I know what I'm saying about our boy, second team, All-Pro, the personal favorite Bears player of the Scottcast. We called him from the beginning. He's been our boy all this time. Our first draft that we covered, just our darling boy, Darnell Wright, A-plus for me all around, big guy.
Yeah, very easy. A-plus, got robbed, should have been first team All-Pro. I don't care. I don't want to hear your good logical arguments for why he should not have been first team All-Pro, okay? Fuck it.
Yeah.
We love Darnell Wright. He's been everything we thought he would be before draft night, you know, when we were when we were sweating it out on the draft, like, please tell me you're taking.
Caleb Williams was a foregone conclusion, so I didn't really feel anything necessarily when he was drafted. Darnell Wright, the most relieved I think I've ever been when a name was read on a Bears draft, because they had so much potential to fuck up that pick, and when they said Darnell, I was so excited. So yeah, we love Darnell. A plus for Darnell. Next on the list, this one probably is where the happy fun times that we have been having so far taper off a little bit. DJ Moore. Travis, what does one say about DJ Moore?
This will be an interesting one. I kind of want to see his stats. I never look at counting stats, Kyle.
I know. Like, I have really
look at them all the time.
Yeah, a lot of times I don't. Yeah, anymore. So here's, I'll give you. So in this is including his postseason numbers. Let's see here.
Oh, just not great. Okay. We got, at least during the regular season, 50 receptions on 85 targets, 682 yards, 6 touchdowns. That's about 40 yards a game for our almost $30 million per year man.
Yes. And then PFF, some advanced stuff. PFF had him down for 1.24 yards per route run. That's not good.
That's bad.
They did credit him with only 3 official drops. That's a little surprising to me.
Wow.
Definitely better than some of I do have to say, when I remember the drops mostly, it's not DJ who was the main culprit of the drops. DJ had other issues, but yes. So I guess with DJ, I'll do some pros and cons here. Pros, I don't think it should be underrated that he did, in fact, play basically every snap possible.
Yes.
You know, the only wide receiver on the roster to get 1,000 snaps. His durability can't be questioned. His willingness to play through injury can't be questioned. I got to give him that. Just as we were talking about last week, I mean, when the effort is there, he did block his ass off sometimes. He did deliver sometimes. He just I wouldn't be so frustrated with him if I didn't think he was capable of so much more than he did, because he shows he's capable of it at times. But what is wide receiver if not to frustrate with erratic effort and personality. So, I mean, I'm going to say, I'm not going to, even though, yes, I could get really angry about what happened on the last play of the game, I could rip him a new asshole. I'm going to just say for DJ on the whole this year, I'll go with a C plus.
So he gave us two of the best moments in recent Bears history. Maybe of all of our Bears history.
He did do that.
Beat the Packers.
He also caught that sick touchdown times. Against the Browns, which was mostly Caleb, but I had hoped that that play would be a turning point for DJ, because DJ, did you notice, you were not supposed to be anything other than a clear out route on that, but you ran really hard and you got the fucking ball. I really hoped that would be a turning point for him. So. Yeah,
weird because, you know, if you remember back at the beginning of the season, it really felt like he went straight into the doghouse, Ben did everything but directly call him out. His effort on the field was lacking. He kind of walked off the field a couple times against the Lions. And that was like at the beginning of the game when the Bears were still in it. He was like, oh, did Rome catch the ball? I'm going to leave, even if he could have been blocking. Definitely improved his mentality as it went along. Unfortunately, I do think a lot of that is because he realized this team was going to be very good. And I think what you see from him today on social media and over the last couple days is him realizing, oh no, are they going to try to trade me to a bad team? Am I going to be a Raider next year, perhaps? I really don't want to go back to a bad team. And the problem is, DJ, you probably are, man. Like that route that ended the Bears season against the Rams was the same as one earlier this year. He just isn't really a fit for this team under Ben Johnson. He was much more of a fit with Matt Eberflus, with Justin Fields, with a quarterback who is just going to take an extra second, a second too long, look at DJ, and then throw the ball to open space.
Right? Well, to be honest, even if that play against the Rams hadn't happened, we talked about this, I don't even view it as a punitive thing necessarily. He's not the right fit for this offense. And also, next year, if everyone's healthy, he's probably at best the fourth target on this roster. I mean, if Luther Burden has mastered the playbook, he's probably, I mean, Colston Loveland might be your number one target, period. He certainly seemed to be Caleb's favorite down the stretch. Luther Burden's probably number two. I think Rome, as a true X, a guy who's going to take a lot of snaps as the isolated receiver in those formations, Rome's going to get a lot of targets naturally that way. You know, Cole Kmet's going to be in the mix with how much 12 and 13 they like to run. I just don't know that DJ Moore is going to be happy regardless as the guy who's likely to be number four in targets on this team. So I think it's the best thing for him and the team. And in terms of making the money right for the other moves they want to make, I think it's best to move on. But yeah, I'm not going to completely motherfuck the guy. I think a C-plus is fair. He did grind out a lot of snaps when everybody else was struggling to get on the field. I will give him that. He had some great highlights. Frustrating player, but still a useful player. And when you look at the NFL right now, some of these teams, some of the wide receiver depth charts they have, like we talk about Kansas City, Buffalo, someone's going to be interested, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the C-plus. I'm tempted to give him like a B-. I feel like we've been very harsh on this guy, and it kind of overshadows the awesome stuff that he has also done. But that's the problem when you make that much money, DJ. Like you can't make that much money and come out here and get 680 yards over the course of the season and have as many issues as you did, and you know, expect everybody to just love you and be all hunky dory and want to keep you around.
Yeah. The next guy up, guy that I have, you know, been a often overly exaggerated for comedic effect critic of on this podcast, Cole Kmet. Now, Cole had the fewest receiving yards since his rookie year this year. He only had 378, but I am actually going to give Cole an A+ because I think this was his best season as a pro, truly, in terms of he is in the role that I think he was
I just love that you're like, you know what? Now it's A+ because you're the number two tight end right where you fucking belong, buddy.
Yes, but not just that. It's it's not just that, and it's not just me being snarky. It's that the way he attacked that role. You want to talk about a guy, people who truly was a selfless, willing blocker, and a guy who, you know, knew he wasn't going to get a shit ton of targets. and still went out there bust. And I mean, got fucking the 2-point conversion against Detroit where he got absolutely wrecked, still held onto the ball. Now, we have made plenty of jokes about Cole Kmet. About Cole Kmet Rack God, about how he cannot, he can catch the ball or he can keep moving. He can't do both at the same time. But that kind of stuff just doesn't bother me when he's in his natural role. This is a guy who is probably the NFL's best number two tight end. That's what I've always said he should be. He's there now. He busted his ass. I think he's going to get a contract extension that keeps him around and lowers his cap number. The Bears were one of the most dangerous teams in the NFL this year in 12 personnel, 13 personnel. They can't do that without Cole. Obviously, Colston's the stud, the star that makes all of that really dangerous. But without Cole being the legitimate presence he is and the legitimate blocker that he is and making them a true threat to run from those formations, like I couldn't have been happy. Like, yeah, I mean, I could ding him for catching the ball and falling down, but like that, he's always been that guy. That's not going to change. I'm not going to hate him for being what he is. But yeah, I was pleased with what Cole Kmet did this year without question.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like you said, the blocking is paramount. We had so much fun this year, both in the Discord and just in personal text being like, he caught it, he fell down, he's jumping like Sammy Sosa for no reason and catching the ball and falling down. Why are you doing this, Cole?
My favorite was
falling on your ass.
My favorite was Adam Hoge getting apoplectic and calling it like a hospital ball that Caleb threw to him against the Bengals. And then you go back and you rewatch and like at no point did Cole have to leave his feet for that ball. He just did it and fell down. And then it was a late hit anyways by the Bengals guy after he was already on the ground. I'm like, how is that a that's not how a hospital ball works. Like
Cole is one of those guys that every NFL coach wants on their team. He is a team leader. He is a guy who's going to do whatever it takes to help the team win. He's a luxury as a second tight end. I mean, A plus. Like, oh my God.
I'm probably being too, but he's where I like the natural order of things. I like God's natural law, and he is where he belongs.
The best thing I could say about Cole is I thought this would be the last year I would see Cole Kmet as a Chicago Bear, and now I feel like whatever he deserves to be paid, they are going to give it to him, and he might just end up being a Bear for life. You know, we're going to be looking at year 12 of Cole Kmet, and we're all going to be like tearily waving goodbye. So I'll give him an A. I think this is his role at this point in his career. And he's a hell of a second option at tight end too.
Yeah. Yeah. This one's tough. The next one up is Rome Odunze.
Ooh, this is a complicated one.
If I could split his grade, I would say he was at like an A minus before the foot injury because he was looking like a dominant number one wide receiver with some drop issues. But then after the foot injury, it was like a D at best. So I think overall I've got to give Rome like a B minus or a C plus with the caveat that like, I am hoping a lot of that was just the foot injury, but until we see him put together a complete season, and until I will say, I went back and I was watching some early games and stuff from before the foot injury, and I like the difference in how fast he was moving.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to slam a guy for going out there and gritting it through the playoffs. I'm clearly not 100%, and even admitting he wasn't 100%, which those guys hate to do. So I don't want to ding him too much. It's a C plus that's kind of an incomplete in its own way. I think we will see a better Rome next year. Now, the one thing that is entirely in his control that was a problem before the injury and after is the fucking drops. That has to get better. He only had a 48.5% catch rate. That's pretty brutal. I think he had a drop rate of over 12%. Can't have that. So that one's entirely in your control, buddy, injury or not. Let's stop dropping the ball. I do think when his foot is healed, when we get a whole healthy Rome next year, another year of him in the offense, I do think he will have that first 1,000-yard season next year, hopefully.
Oh, that's a bold prediction. Rome, real weird season. Started out the year, obviously Caleb's favorite target. You and I speculated that DJ Moore was probably a part of that Ty Dunn article. It certainly seemed like DJ Moore was a part of that. And it seemed like the relationship there between Caleb and DJ was kind of fractured early in the season. And he went to Rome often. Like you said, though, Even if he looked a lot better, his route running was incredible to start the year. Those drops were there from the very beginning. And when he came back, he still couldn't hold on to the ball when he was getting hit. I mean,
and he couldn't separate
this year. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he couldn't separate. And the other thing for Rome, unfortunately, is by the time he came back, like Caleb had decided who the best receivers on this team were. It was Colston Loveland and Luther Burden, and that's where he was looking first. And
yeah,
there is a question moving forward about exactly where Rome is going to fall in the target.
I do think Rome has an advantage in that he is the only true X receiver on this roster. So I think there will always be a defined role for him. Luther could be a Z, could be a slot, could be a lot of things. Rome is the one X that they have. And the offense, notably when DJ Moore was first forced to be the X and he's not very good at it, that was a noticeable thing. So I think Rome will have a defined role next year. I think he'll get his targets. It's just a matter. He's got to hang on to the ball. And I have tried to dismiss it for the longest time as flukes, because we do see that sometimes. Guys have drop issues early in their career. It eventually settles and goes away. I kept trying to tell myself, it's not a huge deal. It's fluky. It'll go away. Just like with all these guys and the drops this year. Like, it feels unsustainable, but, like, boy, they sure fucking sustained it for a long time. So hopefully next year we'll see positive regression from all those guys.
Rome himself had drop issues early on at Washington, and then they really cleared up, leading to that final season where, you know, it was all about that contested catch rate for him. And it feels like that's the one thing he just can't fucking do in the NFL is hold on to a ball when he gets touched. So,
for this season,
not projecting out to hoping he gets better next season. I mean, I feel like a C minus is like generous for Rome. By the end of the year, it was kind of like, I can't believe this guy is out there on the field. I was so hopeful.
Bouncing from that to a much more optimistic case, I don't think we can give, I would personally beat you if you gave Colston Loveland anything less than an A+. Like, what more
easy
could you have possibly asked for from a dude that I think is truly the first time in my life watching a skill player on the Bears offense and thinking, like, this is a goddamn superstar. Like, not even just like this is a star, not a guy that I'm like, just literally just like, this is a guy who is potentially going to be the best at his position in the NFL for a decade. This is just an incredible player, including the playoffs this year. Colston ended up with 906 yards as a rookie tight end in a massively complicated offense at a position that tight end is usually the slowest position to adapt to. That was part of the reason we were so concerned about using a first round pick on the guy. It's like, well, we both really like Colston, but he's 21 and these guys take 3 years to develop sometimes, and it's just like, you're not gonna get, and here he was year one, just a fucking stud. 906 yards, 6 touchdowns, 70 catches. He was third in total offensive grade among tight ends per PFF. He was third in receiving grade and proved to be a better run blocker than I think anybody expected as a rookie. He's a fucking superstar, man. Really.
Yeah. So many, like, we really thought, like, oh, okay, this year, if Colston Loveland comes out and he catches a couple big passes and he looks like a receiving threat and maybe the blocking comes along,
I'd have gone nuts for 500 yards from him as a rookie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would have been like an incredible moment. And instead, he's become Caleb's go-to guy. Like you said, the blocking isn't just good for a rookie. It's good for a tight end. He is the total package right now.
Yeah, he's just already there. He's
young.
He is without question, he was a top five tight end in football this year.
Yeah.
As a rookie. And he's 21. Another reason we wanted him over Tyler, he's only 21. It's just, it's ludicrous. It's insane.
He's a freak.
So,
easy A+ for Colston.
Easy A+ for Colston. Next guy up, DeAndre Swift, a guy that, was embattled that we thought maybe they'd try to replace this year. I am going to give DeAndre, personally, I'm going to give him an A- just because there were still, he took 4 weeks to get going in the first place, there were a few too many plays still where he unnecessarily, and against the Rams too. I mean, one of the last drives that should have been a touchdown, he had a touchdown if he just keeps it where he goes, where he's supposed to go. he would have had to run through a guy a little bit, but I mean, it was there. And he bounced it outside unnecessarily, got stopped. Bears didn't get the touchdown. There were just a few too many instances of that. I can't give him an A+ by any means, but made huge strides as the year went along, really seemed to take the coaching, really seemed to do a much better job hitting the hole, did a much better job running through contact. Had some huge plays as a receiver. The touchdown against Washington comes to mind, but he had a couple others in there too. I'll give DeAndre Swift an A.
B+ for me. I would definitely say he was our best running back. The transformation just of his body from, you know, the stereotypical lightning to Kyle Monongai's thunder. Even though Kyle gets bounced around like a ping pong ball sometimes, like DeAndre has added a lot of muscle and he was running through dudes. I've never seen DeAndre Swift finish runs before anywhere in the NFL or in college. And he's been doing it this year. Just an absolute beast. But like you said, he still has some annoying tendencies. Those don't just go away overnight. He'll miss a hole because he wants to try to bounce it outside. And he still isn't the kind of running back who's going to just take over a game for you, even with superior blocking like the Bears had this season. So I would say I don't want to overrate him too much because I do still think the Bears could upgrade over DeAndre Swift.
Well, I think they could. I guess that's the thing. We're trying to grade guys relative to their expectations and everything to the role.
Well, I feel like that's our starting like running back, man.
Compared to my preseason expectations for DeAndre, he massively outperformed them. I guess when you consider his contract and everything, yeah, B may be more fair than an A-. I'll go with an A- still too because I'm feeling charitable. And because this next guy, I am not going to give anything close to an A-. Olamide Zaccheaus, this one hurts me, folks, because he's a guy. I liked what a willing blocker he was. I thought he was an underrated slot guy when
he
was in Washington. I only
knew who this man was because when Kyle was like,
because for like 4 years running. For 4 years running, I was like, you know, he'd be a solid role player for
what
him.
A great bear. Olamide Zaccheaus, Travis. And I'm like, who the fuck is that?
Unfortunately, I mean, this is something I've talked about before. And it's kind of with TJ Edwards, too, whenever we get to him. Those guys who are undrafted, who aren't super great athletes, who get by for on guile and on smarts, like they have a window of only a couple years before, because the instant you lose a single step that you can't afford to lose, you know, they just become pretty bad pretty quickly. And obviously, I mean, I don't think losing a step is necessarily the reason that Zaccheaus couldn't fucking catch the goddamn ball when it was in his hands. But definitely affected his route running, him getting separation on those slot concepts. He is a pretty big disappointment for you. I'm going to go ahead, compared to my expectations, I'm going to go ahead and say that Zaccheaus is a D at best.
That is a straight F from me.
Straight F from you? Okay.
Every time this dude was on the field running around, it was like, oh, God, no. Early season, he couldn't go the right way. Late season, he couldn't catch the ball. And then even later season, we just stopped throwing the ball at him.
The only reason I didn't give him an F is because he caught that really sick touchdown pass from Caleb against the Packers at Lambeau that went through Case. Like that, I still can't believe he fucking, like, I was like, oh, really? Of all the passes you've dropped this year, that's the one?
Of all the guys to catch that ball, it's a Olamide Zaccheaus.
It was really, like, that was really cool. So he gave me that one moment, so I didn't give him an F for that. Okay. But yeah, otherwise, really, definitely disappointed in Olamide this year. Next on the list, the Canadian Eagle. That's a tough one to grade.
It's another fun one. Yeah.
It is not fair to ask too much of your undrafted second year Canadian left tackle with T-Rex arms. The fact that they started him for multiple games and weren't completely embarrassed is a success in and of itself. But at the same time, he's a really fucking bad pass blocker.
Yeah.
He pretty much entirely tanked the game plan in the second Lions game himself. He was the reason they had to start Joe Tooney at left tackle against the Rams in the playoffs. I don't really know how to weight all that. I mean, like, compared to what you should expect of an undrafted Canadian, he's probably an A, but in the world, just based on his performance, I got to say like a C+ for Theo, and I think you could be a really good guard someday, son.
He like coming into the year, he should have been like our fourth option at left tackle, right? Hypothetically, it should have been Braxton Jones 1, Ozzie Chipilo 2, and then maybe Kieran Amagaji 3rd if Ryan Poles wasn't, if if that guy existed, right?
Oh, man, I forgot about Kieran Amagaji.
Yeah. Yep, there's a guy. So, yeah, like you said, it's just so hard to judge. Like, what, like he's a really good run blocker, which is incredible for, like, the fourth tackle on this team, the fifth tackle on this team. That's amazing. But, yeah, he's not the answer. He's never going to be. But he does a really good job at that weird swing tackle position that Ben uses all the time, where he checks in as eligible and then he moves around the formation kind of like a tight end, but the left left tackle position, whatever you
want. But he didn't
call
catch
that.
The ball at his one target.
I don't care about that. So
what about when he was sprinting 16 miles per hour against the Packers and he threw up the mailbox?
He pulled two guys onto him by throwing up that mailbox. That was beautiful. I'm giving him a solid B.
Okay, that's probably fair.
He should never be starting at left tackle, and we know that. Everybody knows that now. That's fine. But for what we need from him, I think he does a good job. And that's way more than you should expect out of that dude.
This next one I'm going to keep short and sweet because it makes me too sad. Ozzie Trapio. I got to give Ozzie an A
A
guy that stepped into the lineup as a rookie against a brutal schedule of pass rush. I mean, his first fucking start was what, against the Giants and Abdul Carter, and then he was facing, I mean, he had to face TJ Watt, he had to face Micah Parsons, he had to I mean, it was a murderer's row of pass rushers, and he never looked overmatched. I really thought the Bears had locked down left tackle, and now, unfortunately, I mean, a patellar tendon rupture is at least going to cost him the 2026 season, probably might be career ending. Super depressing, but definitely an A for what did happen. I hope that's not the end of his career, but I don't want to blow smoke up anybody's ass. We saw this exact thing happen to Mark Colombo, and now that was 20 years ago. Hopefully things have improved since then and how they handle those kind of things, but it's if I had a nickel for every time the Bears had a rookie left tackle from Boston College who looked really good and then blew their patellar tendon, I'd have two nickels. It's not a lot, but it's weird it happened twice.
Yeah, like Godspeed to Ozzie. Hopefully when we see him in 2027, he's doing fine. It does usually take a year of playing, even after you've healed from that injury, to really get back into form. Yeah. Luckily, his form as a rookie was really strong. Like, he displayed everything that kind of flashed on tape in college and maybe a little bit more. He could get better at run blocking. He's not going to have a huge chance to work on it for a while. But yeah, A+ for me, because I did not expect that out of him, especially having to come in so soon because Braxton Jones was clearly unwell.
And he hustled and got off the field after destroying his knee so that he didn't hurt the team and cost them a timeout, unlike certain weak, soft, pathetic Packers that I could name in the same game. So, you know,
that's right.
Unselfish player there. Yeah.
Easy A+ for me. And I hope forever from now when we can talk about him again that he's well.
Rest now, brother Ozzie. We have the watch, and I'll see you in Valhalla.
Okay.
All right. Moving on.
We're moving right along.
Kyle Manongai. This is an interesting one, too, because, like...
Chungus.
In one sense, you got a seventh round running, you got a seventh round pick, and he became a contributor. That's generally an A+ in general, but I do think he at a certain point you put that aside because he was getting significant snaps, and you kind of got to judge what he did on him. And Manongai, awesome in short yardage, really good in getting yards after contact, and that, but the vision not great. He left a lot of yards on the field. Not super elusive and was a terrible receiver and was not a good pass blocker. Yeah. So needs to step, which I mean, for a rookie, I would expect him to improve in those things. Most rookies are not great pass blockers, not writing Kyle off by any means, but I do think when I factor everything in for some people, I think it'd be an easy A. I'm going to go ahead and just give him a solid B.
Yeah, Chinungai looked exactly like he did for 50 years at Rutgers, which is like, this is our power back. He's going to run straight ahead and run over some dudes. But every once in a while, he's going to run super hard at a guy who is twice his size, and he is going to get blasted off into outer space. And that one day, that dude is going to get hit, and he is just going to ricochet straight out of the stadium. So he's like a power back, but he's not like a Derrick Henry always go forward power back. He's just a I want to get hit power back. And I think like there's just a barrier there with Kyle, which is why he was a seventh round pick. But yeah, like you said, for a seventh round pick, that was fantastic. It's so hard, man. I feel like a B is good. I would be happy to never have to use Kyle Manungai again.
His drop rate was 15%, by the way. Yeah. That's four drops.
He can't catch, he can't block, and sometimes when he runs, he just runs into a wall and falls down really hard. I think as the season went on more and more, I was like, maybe you just keep DeAndre Swift on the field. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then finally, I just want to say, how bad must Roshan Johnson be? I kept saying it like once a game where I'm like,
speaking of, I think I don't think we're going to go. I don't think we're going to go that far down the snap count and handing out grades. But for in case anyone's curious, Roshan Johnson got four snaps this year as the Chicago Bear. In year three of his career.
Oh, no.
Four snaps before he got injured again. Travis Homer got...
And final year of Roshan Johnson's career.
Travis Homer got six. That's right. If you're listening and you, like me, had the same reaction that I had a couple minutes ago, and I was looking at this, and I was like, oh, shit, I forgot that Roshan and Travis Homer were on the 2025 Bears. So, yeah, B for Manungai. What did you give him totally?
I gave him a B as well. I feel like that's almost like at some points during the season that was generous, but at other points during the season it wasn't nearly enough. Like the Philadelphia.
Well, it's one of those things where like
he destroyed the Eagles.
To quote Cam Newton here, we give that grace to young players. Like this same effort as a receiver and a pass blocker will not merit a B next year. So he does still have.
Also, the guy who got, I think, zero snaps, who shocks me every time I think about him still being on the team, because Drew Dalman played every snap. The legend, Ryan Bates. Still the backup center on the. Remember when we really needed Ryan Bates, guys? Remember when that was like the signing for the offensive?
Ryan Bates. Oh, man. A-plus for Ryan Bates this year. And looked great in his zero snaps.
He's going to be healthy going into next year.
He sure is. And probably back in Buffalo or something. Next up, Luther Burden III.
A plus
for this stud. I mean, yes, half the time he doesn't know what route he's running, but God, he looks good doing it. We'll see what he looks like next year when he's actually hopefully mastered the playbook.
Where did his yards per route run end up, Kyle?
It was high.
He was top five in yards per route run before the last couple games of the season.
So he ended up, hold on, so his yards per route run ended up at 2.34 if you include the postseason.
Almost double DJ Moore's.
Yes, if you just do regular season, I think it was even higher. It's 2.69 if you include his just the regular season, and I believe that was something like the list of guys who had been in that had more than 2.5 as a rookie was a very good list. It was like him, Jamar Chase, Odell Beckham Jr., couple of all studs, really good group for him to be in. Can't say anything about Luther Burden
as of 3 weeks ago. He was number three in yards per route run on the season overall. And overall,
presumably behind Puka and JSN, I would think.
And then as far as a rookie is concerned, he is number one all time in yards per route run. Minimum 150 routes run. It's so funny that we have it just logged in stone. Us and Nikki going through that draft where he's like, you know, I really like Luther Burden, and the Packers pick is getting close. And we were all just like, yeah, Green Bay's taking Luther Burden. This is going to be terrible. And he was so excited. And then they take Matthew Golden. And then to add insult to injury, the Bears get Luther Burden the next day. And he I mean, if anything, he exceeded my expectations of the first year. You would have thought he's stuck behind DJ Moore. Roma Dunze is going to have a big year. We drafted Colston Loveland higher than we drafted him. Cole Kmet is still on the team. And it's just, there's something about him, man. You can't deny him. He's going to work his way onto the field. He quickly became one of Caleb's favorite targets. Obviously, he had a couple of drops. Hopefully those get cleared up. Certainly not as many as other guys on the team.
He averaged 7.3 yards of yak per reception. And that's fucking wild, man.
He is a dude who could, he's the guy who we thought Devin Hester would be when you put him at wide receiver, right? Just get the ball in his hands and it feels like he's going to magic up a first down. And he just looks at a guy, makes a miss, and he's getting 8 extra yards every catch. So,
yeah,
just what an awesome player.
Yeah, he rules. Can't wait to see what he does next year. I think we'll do about 3 more players before we get 4 more players before the snap counts get so low it's not worth discussing. Durham Smythe, you got a letter grade for Durham Smythe?
Oh boy, he was out there a lot.
Yeah, we love that 13 personnel.
Early in the season, I didn't love that we were throwing at him as much, and we didn't throw at him as much second half of the season. Was he a good blocker? He always had a lot of help. He was always double-teaming people. How do you judge that, you know?
Yeah, let's see here. As a receiver, Durham had 1 drop on...
That was in the Raiders game, as I recall.
It was the Vikings game,
I believe.
He had 1 drop on 9 targets. He caught 6 passes for 36 yards. His pass block grade was a 61.6. His run block grade, what'd they give him for run blocking? 53.2. So PFF, not big fans of Durham Smythe.
You don't have to be on this team anymore, Durham.
Yeah, he was a third tight end. We'll give him a C. Why not?
Yeah.
Okay.
For see you later.
Next up, Braxton Jones with 210 snaps. This one bums me out, but I'm gonna have to give him a D. I will give him a D because I refuse to give him an F for going out there when he was clearly not even close to 100%. I can't give him any better than that in good conscience. So
very difficult year for Braxton. Obviously, you and I were both rooting for him. We are noted Braxton Jones fans, and he wanted to play. He's going into a contract year. This could be, you know, a life-changing year for Braxton coming out of Southern Utah, right? Like, just not necessarily thinking about getting into the NFL. He really worked his way up to this. And honestly, it sounds like this coaching staff just didn't really see him fitting into their future plans regardless. Maybe he got a sense of that and he thought, God, if I don't get out there now, maybe this rookie actually takes my job and then I just ride the bench until this offseason. He pushes himself out there early. He just makes things worse. He looks bad. He's injured. He's clearly not fully recovered at the very least. And we get the rest of the season here. He was cleared by the end of the year and we didn't have a left tackle and the coaching staff didn't seem like they even looked twice at him. They were like, let's put Tooney at left tackle. Let's move Jordan McFadden to left guard. And let's worry about everything else later. So I hope wherever he ends up this offseason, he can, you know, show off what Braxton Jones showed off his first 3
years. Yeah, I'm sure he's going to get a 1-year prove-it deal. Hopefully he can play like the Braxton Jones we knew before this year and get himself. Yeah. I mean, if he get himself some of that Dan Moore money next year, perhaps.
Right. Damn right. Good luck, Brad.
Yeah, and then I think, let's see here. We'll do, with 86 snaps, Jahdae Walker. I got to give him an A, man, for what he was asked to do.
A plus for Jahdae Walker.
Touchdown of the season against the Packers.
He was undrafted. The Bears coaching staff was impressed enough with him to protect him. So yeah, they did. Stayed on the roster.
I felt like that was notable, and I think I even said that to you at one point early in the season before he ever had to be active. I was like, man, it's interesting to me that with all these injuries, they have never once risked Jahdae Walker going out of the practice. And I do think it's worth notable that Jahdae is, I mean, he was not an impressive receiver in college, wasn't on a good offense, but he is a good athlete. Like, he's not a guy that, like, if a guy, had, I think he had an relative athletic score of 8.82. He 6'3", ran You know, what was his 40 time? 4.45. Yeah, 4.43. It looks like. So I mean, he's a good athlete. He's not a. It wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if he really becomes an actual contributor next year. But yeah, just for I mean, if he never does anything else for the Chicago Bears, simply catching that 4th and 4 against the Packers is going to make him a legend forever. So
hell yeah,
yeah. And then I think the last guy that got enough snaps that we could just discuss him at, with 83 snaps, Jordan McFadden, most of those coming in the game against the Rams. And I thought he looked pretty solid. I really did. That's a good front. He did not look embarrassed at all. So
it definitely be interesting to
see if they have plans for him next year.
Yeah, if we have to do that next year, feel pretty good about it, right? Like McFadden is a guy with a ton of talent who fell on some hard luck at it was the Chargers, right? He was with the Chargers. He fell out of the rotation, fell out of favor with that staff, a lot like Jonah Jackson did with the Rams. And obviously the Bears had a ton of faith in him, moving Tooney out to left tackle and then him starting at left guard in the most important game of Ben Johnson's career up to that point. And, yeah, he held his own. So you got to give that guy another A-plus because, like, what the hell else can you ask from your backup left guard just coming out there stone cold playing in the divisional round in a sub-zero temperatures. And, yeah, pulling it out. So pleased with that guy. I guess, yeah, that's it for the offense, right? Should we grade Ben Johnson here at the end? He's the offensive coach. I mean, he's the head coach, but he's more of an offensive guy.
I think – God, I don't want to sound ungrateful. I'll give Ben an A – just an A, not an A+.
Okay.
Because he did have just a few things that we did nitpick over the year. You have some questions about his fourth down decision making. Mm-hmm. I have mostly just said that I would like to see him be a little less stubborn about when his run game is getting beat at the line of scrimmage. I'd like to see him adapt a little faster. I'd like to see him next year, you know, working a bit more spread stuff for Caleb when they to avoid those slow starts, trust the quarterback to kind of do his thing a little bit. But yeah, overall, I mean, we've got the guy at coach, we've got the guy at quarterback, A for Ben Johnson easily, in my opinion.
Yeah, he already feels like the best Bears head coach in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, not that like, the competition's super stiff, but we did love right. Lovie.
We love Lovie, but yeah, this feels like something different. But yeah, I mean, there are quibbles here and there, obviously.
Yeah.
It's not about but going for it on fourth down, it's about when and why and how. And those are the things that I don't like about it right now. And then, yeah, I think just early game, it feels like he throws a lot of snaps and drives away on very basic run plays, on very basic pass plays. And then he starts to cook later in the game. And I think a lot of the blowback comes onto the players like, hey, why aren't you so good in the first half, but you're really good in the second half? Some of it is just I really don't like the way he's sequencing his plays. I think that's going to get better the more trust he has in his quarterback and in his wide receivers. These concepts that Ben Johnson runs, they are hard for the quarterback, but they are hard for young guys and hard for wide receivers too. And that's all we've got is young receivers. Next year, these guys are going to have a much greater handle on things, and I'm hoping Ben opens it up right from the start.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, if you contrast this to the last time the Bears thought they were in a similar position with Matt Nagy, I mean, I was one of the people kind of pointing out I was a little skeptical of Nagy. And I'm like, okay, but if you look, I'm always skeptical of the offensive guru whose defense does the heavy lifting. Like that, that to me is a why are you here kind of thing. So, you know, Nagy, that first year, I think they were 21st in points, or they were 21st in yards per play. They were like 9th in scoring, but they had 6 defensive touchdowns. So they were truly a middle of the pack offense in terms of scoring touchdowns. And I was like, it reminded me of Brian Billick when he got hired because he was the offensive coordinator for the 1998 Vikings, and he wins the Super Bowl with the Ravens, but his offense was dog shit every year he was there. It was because he had this. So I'm always skeptical of that guy. That's how I felt about Nagy. You know, Ben Johnson, here he is. The strength of this Bears team was absolutely their offense. He delivered on all those fronts. And nothing kind of get. Honestly, sometimes on offense, we were almost begging him to get a little more gimmicky. Yeah. There were times where I was like, you know, we both think RPOs are dishonorable, but you don't have to never use them. You know, right. Sometimes sometimes the free 5 yards is kind of nice, you know? Sometimes
it feels a little bit like Ben is almost being too conservative with Caleb as a weapon. Like, he really doesn't want him to get hit. He doesn't want him to get tackled. He doesn't want him to run the ball too much. And it feels like we could have converted to a lot more short yardage situations.
Ben is a lot of guys say they're their own biggest critic. Ben truly is, I think, his own biggest critic. I think he's a guy who's going to do a lot of self scouting over the offseason. I think I'm very excited to see where he goes in year two as well. So
you mentioned, I would also give Ben an A, by the way. You mentioned Matt Nagy. So is this where we can dunk on him for being replaced by Bears running backs coach Eric Bieniemy and for the Chiefs being like, thanks, Matt. Your contract ran out.
It's where I can dunk on a bunch of assholes on Twitter who think there's a meaningful distinction between fired and didn't have his contract renewed.
You know who those guys are? Those are contract workers whose contracts have run out before. And they're like, I didn't get fired. My contract ran out.
Yeah, it's really funny the way that they were like, so I said, basically, I commented on the Chiefs. The Chiefs issued, gave Matt Nagy a big goodbye Twitter post, and I was like, oh, okay, so all this, Nagy is a serious head coach candidate. That wasn't actually real. It was the Chiefs desperately doing PR and trying to make it real so that they didn't have to admit that they fired him, but they fired him. And then a bunch of Chiefs, I don't know if they were even Chiefs fans, a bunch of people that may or may not be Matt Nagy burners, I don't know, going, he wasn't fired, they just didn't renew his contract. And I'm like, okay, but that's like, if they still wanted him to be their offensive coordinator, that's a paperwork issue. They don't want him as like, what do you call it when you want you
with the guy who you replaced? Like, yeah, they've admitted their mistake here.
When you don't currently have a job and your old job doesn't want you anymore, that, like, all right, guys, we can, that's a hair to split, I think. So that was really, which, to be fair, I'm currently in the Matt Nagy, Mitch Trubisky era of my book on Bears quarterbacks. I've gone back and I've watched a lot of Matt Nagy pressers and read a lot of Matt Nagy press clippings. Had almost kind of, after 3 years of Eberflus, who was on the whole much worse, I did kind of forget what an insecure prick Matt Nagy was to some extent. And I do feel like if anybody is going to use the, hey, he wasn't fired, his contract just wasn't renewed line of attack, it's going to be Matt Nagy himself, no doubt. For the rest of his life, if someone says fired by the Chiefs, he's going to say, whoa, they just didn't renew my contract. So
that's right. You had forgotten all of the play calling duty nonsense with Matt Nagy, right?
The
fantastic stuff.
How much of the back and forth. I also had kind of forgotten how many different occasions Nick Foles was caught either via hot mic or through what he said to Brian Greasy when he clearly thought it was off the record but wasn't, like, just shit talking Matt Nagy.
Nick, Super Bowl MVP Big Dick Foles was just tired to death of
Matt. Well, I remember reading an Athletic article in 2021 after the Browns debacle in Justin Fields' first start, where there was a team meeting and they said team leaders openly criticized Matt Nagy's play calling. And I was like, I guarantee you Nick Foles is one of them. And the very next sentence was, among them, quarterback Nick Foles. And I thought that was really funny because Nick Foles that year was like barely on the roster. They kept him around because they had to. He was the third string quarterback. Like, that man nothing was at stake for Nick Foles. He just saw an opportunity to tell Matt Nagy, like, P.S. your offense is shit. And he just fucking took it. He was just like, to be clear, I'm hating just for the love of the game here. Yeah. It's no skin off my balls at this point, but your offense does fucking suck, dude.
Yeah. Yes. I can't wait for the Chiefs to have this big resurgence this year and for me to finally be able to be like, see, I fucking told you. It's just him standing there. He was the problem.
Oh, shit.
All right. Okay. Well, that's it for the offense. Next week, we'll be on to the defense.
Defense. Defense. Way out on that bumpers road. Now you know.